Well, good morning. Good to be here this morning, and today is the first Sunday of 2021. I'm not sure if that makes it special or not. I don't know if you've been aware of what's going on in the world today, but just watching the news and seeing a few things on the old television, I get the impression a lot of people think that things are going to get better just by turning the page on the calendar. I don't know about that. I look back, and in 2020, we faced a lot of problems, didn't we? A lot of obstacles were in our paths. This morning, I'd like to talk a little bit about how we did and maybe how we can do in dealing with obstacles like that. The three synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, each give us an account of a time when Jesus and his disciples faced some pretty serious obstacles, obstacles that threatened to keep them from doing what they'd set out to do. And I'd like to talk today about how they dealt with those obstacles, and maybe we can get some insight on how we should deal with ours. The event I have in mind began in the town of Capernaum, upon the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee, as Jesus was teaching beside the sea. There actually, as I said, an account of this given in all three of the synoptic Gospels, and I've chosen the Gospel of Mark from the fourth chapter and the fifth for our consideration today. So I'd like to start by reading from Mark, the fourth chapter, beginning with verse 35. On that day, when evening came, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side," leaving the crowd, and they took him along with them in the boat just as he was, and other boats were with them. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on a cushion, and they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith?" And they became very much afraid and said to one another, Who then is this that even the wind and the seas obey him?" Well, that's Mark's account of the calming of the storm on the Sea of Galilee. And I'd like for just a moment to refer back to Matthew's account because it gives us a better chronology of events there. Jesus had just healed the mother-in-law of Peter. And there have been a lot of jokes about that, that once he healed Peter's mother-in-law, they were having to get out of town. But it was at the seashore following that where he told his disciples that they were going to travel across the lake when a scribe accosted him and declared his intent to follow Jesus. Now, I don't know what that means to you that a scribe made that request or made that declaration to Jesus, but we've got to stop and think that a scribe is a person that was very high up in the order of Jewish politics. A scribe was someone whose job it was to write interpretations of the law, the Mosaic law, sort of a by-your-numbers instructions on how you were supposed to make sure that you were in compliance with the law. But more than that, a scribe's job was to write interpretations of how people were supposed to comply with the traditions that had been set out by the Jewish leaders. And to them, their traditions were more important than the law. In fact, it's been said that if they wanted something done or wanted people to act in a certain way, they would just make up a tradition and act like it had been around for a long time and expect people to follow it. Well, the scribe met up with Jesus and declared to him that he said, "I will follow you." And Jesus gave him a rather strange response. And that's really all we have of that encounter when he said that the foxes have holes and the birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And just after that, another person confronted Jesus, and we're not given what his request was or what the encounter was like, but this man said to Jesus, let me first go and bury my father. And after that, Jesus began to teach. And remember that he had said, let's get in the boat and go across the lake. Then we have recorded it for us in the Gospels a series of parables that were included as Jesus continued to teach for a while that day. And now Mark's account suggests that when evening came, Jesus abruptly instructed his disciples once again to journey in a ship to the other side of the lake. So Jesus had earlier set out to travel to the other side of the sea, but then encountered that obstacle of a scribe seeking to become a follower, and then there was another unspecified individual wanting to delay his discipleship and bury his father. Then also there was a crowd that was hungry for his teaching. But while Jesus took time to deal with these delays, he never lost sight of the goal to travel to the other side of the sea as he again called for their departure. I've read many scholars who understand that phrase that where they said that they left taking Jesus just as he was. That just as he was would mean that they left without making preparation. That means they didn't say goodbye to their friends. They didn't take a change of clothes. They didn't pack any food for dinner. They just left. Now, in all fairness, I should also say that there are a few writers that I've come across that suggest that Jesus had been standing in the boat teaching with the boat a few feet off the shore. And in that way, the sound of his voice would reflect off the water and provide better acoustics. And that we see that described in that way when Jesus taught in various places in the New Testament. And so it could have been that he was standing in the boat that way, and when he asked them to cast off, they would go to the other shore, that they did so, leaving him standing right where he was. I don't know. I do like to focus a bit on the notion that they left without preparation, without providing for their creature comforts. Why would they have done that? It is likely that Jesus made that choice. Jesus was more concerned with the mission than he was with food or drink, and he never lost sight of his goal. And I think that comes fully to light when we consider the activities of the following day. I believe that Jesus had a divine appointment with a demon-possessed man in a town called Gadara on the following morning, and nothing was going to keep him from meeting that appointment. They'd already been delayed, and meeting this man who was in such great need was far more important than stopping at the pizza place for some carryout for dinner on their voyage. We can't know what their journey might have been like if they had departed when Jesus called for them to leave the first time, before the encounter with the scribe. But the way it was, it turned out just right for some life lessons for the disciples and even some life lessons for us today. Jesus delayed his journey to speak to a scribe. That was an obstacle that stood in his path. He needed to deal with that. And then to teach the people who were hungry for teaching. And that also delayed him. And then he left with little concern for creature comforts. How about Christians today? Do we respond to God's call immediately? Or do we wait a while until a better time? Or until the Spirit moves us? Just a question for us to ponder and think upon in light of the way Jesus answered the call to minister to the demoniac. And so they cast off from the shore, and then they encountered this storm. And it's puzzled me. I wonder, did the disciples know about the mission for the next day? Did they know about this divine appointment in Gadara? I don't know what they did after they got on board. They were probably in a ship that could have been as much as 30 feet long and 8 feet wide at the widest part, with a single mast and a sail the size of a bed sheet for a king-size bed. And that ship didn't go very fast. It was a heavy thing. We don't really know how big it was, but what I described there in size, there have been ships that have been reconstructed out of the ruins of ships found sunk in the mud on the floor of the sea there. So we think it might have been one that big. There wasn't room for a onboard movie theater to entertain them on their journey or anything else of that nature. So I wonder, how did they pass the time? I think they probably had some conversation, and I can't help but believe that Jesus told them what they were about, because I think Jesus knew who they were going to meet the following day. And so the disciples that were following him on that boat surely had some understanding that they had a mission to keep, and the journey across the sea was just a difficulty they had to face. But then the storm came, and the winds blew, and the rain came down, and the waves came up and crashed over the side of the boat. And so we come to another and wonder, where did these disciples place their trust? We'd like to think that they trusted in God, but I'm going to suggest that they were trusting in that storm. They didn't intend it that way, but when they looked at those waves and looked at the water filling up the boat, they trusted that that storm was going to sink their boat. They trusted that that storm was going to keep them from reaching where they were headed. And as a result, they woke Jesus up and said, "Don't you care that we're perishing?" They didn't rest in the faith that the one who was sending them to Gadara was the same one who was in total control over the elements that assailed them. He was the same one who created the ocean and created the sky from which the waves came and the wind came and the rain came. And he created them, and he could put them at ease at the sound of his voice. What about Jesus, though? How did he approach those obstacles that faced them there that day? He ignored the obstacles. He was asleep in the back of the boat. He knew that the obstacles would be handled, and he focused instead on the mission in Gadara. When we focus upon the obstacles and put our faith in them, and we usually don't say it in that way, but we are trusting that those obstacles will stop us or will hinder us. When we do that, we'll almost always lose sight of our goal, and we will fail. We even do that when we try to share the hope of salvation with people. We're sometimes more likely to expect a rejection of our message than we are to visualize someone's joyful acceptance of the hope of the gospel. That's something that we need to change. Well, now we have Jesus asleep in the back of the boat, and I don't know how they were going to survive that storm unless Jesus calmed the storm. But I think Jesus knew how they would survive that storm. And I think that they could have survived it without Jesus standing up and shouting, "Peace be still." In fact, I doubt that it was even necessary for him to calm the storm. I don't think God sent the storm to test them, although maybe he did as a lesson to the disciples. But I think rather it was the devil that sent the storm, with God's permission, of course, if you remember how that works. Remember when Jesus told Simon Peter that Satan had asked permission to test him. And I think if these disciples had possessed sufficient faith in God to see them through, then they would have shown Satan something new about the matter of riding out the storm. Well, nonetheless, how it turned out, Jesus stood up. And I would say that Jesus stood up not for the purpose of calming the storm. He stood up to calm the disciples because they were hysterical. But in order to calm them, he had to calm the storm. And so he did that. And after he calmed the storm, he asked a probing question. And people today argue over how to apply that question in our lives today. He said, "Where is your faith?" When we consider the actions of the apostles and how they did not trust in God, but rather believed that the storm would be an obstacle they could not overcome, I think that what Jesus asked now becomes clear in its meaning. He wanted to know why their faith was put in the wrong place. Well, the story continues in the fifth chapter of Mark, beginning with verse 1, so let's look at that for a moment. They came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. And seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. Shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you, by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said unto him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to implore him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons implored him, saying, "Send us into the swine, so that we may enter them." Jesus gave them permission, and coming out, the unclean spirits entered into the swine. And the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. And their herdsmen ran away and reported it in the city and in the country, and the people came to see what it was that had happened. Well, for the first time in what must have seemed like forever, this man was free of torment. Now, he could think clearly enough to keep his shirt on, as well as his other clothes. And maybe now he even knew his name. Before, when Jesus asked his name, the demons answered for him and said their name was Legion. And we've read the story about how the demons entered into the pigs. And the pigs took a swan dive. Or would that be a swine dive? Off of the cliff and into the sea. If you don't like that, I could do an alliteration about it, how the swine slid down the slippery slope into the swirling sea and suffocated. But maybe that's a little too much. The water at the base of the cliff must have been quite a sight. 2,000 pigs drowned in the sea there. I wouldn't have wanted to stay around there very long. Well, it wasn't long before a mob came out of town, and boy, were they angry. Or were they just scared? You see, for years they'd been terrorized by this demoniac, running around naked, breaking chains and cutting himself, screaming and ranting and threatening people while he lived among the tombs. See what Mark has to say about that as he continues, beginning with verse 15 of chapter 5. They came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to implore him to leave their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed and was imploring him that he might accompany him, and he did not let him, but he said unto him, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And then finally this last verse, the 20th. If I were going to give a pop quiz at the end of the sermon, there would be something out of this verse would be on it. So pay careful attention. And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. Now, can you just imagine what it was like for these people to hold a funeral there in that cemetery with this wild man running loose? When I read this and think about that, I'm reminded of an old Baptist preacher. In fact, he lives right here in Mansfield. I was listening to him tell some tales one time, and he talked about performing a funeral, and they were at the graveside, and they just got through with the graveside service and the prayer, and he was just reaching out to shake hands with some of the family, and a jet plane went over and a big sonic boom hit, and he was talking about some of the comments, and I think about that and how much more difficult it must have been to endure this wild man running loose through the tombs when they're trying to hold a funeral in that cemetery. Oh, sure, they were upset about the pigs, but I think there was something more serious here. This wild man had probably injured people in the past, and now here is this Jesus who has more power even than the demons that made this wild man so dangerous. They just wanted Jesus gone. So Jesus prepared to leave, but the man came up to him and asked if he could go with him. He'd do anything just to be with this one who had set him free. And of course, he probably wanted to get away from this place that held so many bad memories. And Jesus didn't turn the man away in the same way that he did the scribe back in Capernaum. Instead, he just said, "No, I've got a job for you to do. You stay here at home and tell all your friends and neighbors what the Lord has done for you." I'm sure that that man must have been disappointed, but he didn't flinch. He simply stayed there in that place where the people had mocked him and laughed at him and run from him and shut him out and probably had never given him any help or solace whatever. And now he has to minister to them with the story of Jesus. But this man was so eager to serve Jesus that he did just what Jesus asked of him. How would you have responded if you had been in his place? I don't know about you, but I'd like to think that I would have done what Jesus asked. But in reality, I think if I could put myself in his place, I know that I might have tried to talk to one or two people, and when they rebuffed me, I'd have probably gone somewhere else. But you see what kind of opportunity this man had to witness here, where everyone knew about his past, and now they could see the miracle of how he had changed. But I'm thinking that this man himself didn't see it that way. He wasn't thinking about the opportunity that he had. I think he simply obeyed this one to whom he owed so much. And again, how about you? Has God ever called upon you to do things that are unpleasant or inconvenient? How have you responded? Have you kept your eyes on the goal, or have you looked at the obstacles? Have you obeyed God even when it was inconvenient? You see, if we'll trust in God and do what He asks, can you just imagine how things can turn out? Well, we have a little bit of evidence here in Mark's gospel how things turned out for this recovered demoniac. Remember that I said that Mark's gospel gives this account in the 4th and 5th chapter of his book. Well, in the last part of chapter 7, Jesus' journey led him through the region of the Decapolis. This is an area east of Jordan extending up alongside the Sea of Galilee. The name of the Decapolis refers to 10 principal cities that are found there. And I bet you can't guess what one of those cities' names is. It's Gadara. Now, the Decapolis is a large area, but I can't help but think that on this journey, Jesus ran into some of those people who had run him out of Gadara. Or at the very least, he encountered someone who knew about his earlier visit there. But this time, Jesus healed many people as he journeyed through Decapolis, and he healed a deaf man. And on that occasion, there were some observers there who declared, "Look at Jesus. He has done all things well." Could the testimony of the former demoniac have had anything to do with the people of the Decapolis being so open and accepting of Jesus now when they wanted him gone earlier? I think it had a lot to do with it. And I think that we can take a lesson from that we'll just obey the Lord. He'll turn what seems like an impossible task into a big success. We serve a God who can calm the storm. We serve a God who has power over the strongest of demons. We serve a God who can turn an impossible task into a roaring success. We just need to trust him and not take our eyes off the goal, even if the devil put storms in our path. You pray with me, please. Thank you, Father, that you give us a mission in our life, even though many times we don't understand what it is. And I would pray that you'd help each one of us to daily seek what your will is for us and give us the courage to follow the path that you set before us. Help us, Father, to keep our eyes fixed on you, to keep our eyes fixed on the goal that you set before us, the task at hand. And forgive us when we let obstacles and distractions get in our way and take us from our course. Help us that we might learn how to deal with those things, that our mission might be a success as we serve you in the kingdom. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.